I now wish this podcast was released to the public. Do you know why? Because it's got a perfect title. Mine's bigger than yours.
Mine's bigger than yours? We would call it Mine's Bigger Than Yours.
Oh dear, I've got a bigger one than you. Show. Happy Wednesday, patrons! It's Tottenham Day, and here we go, James. Tottenham. I'm skipping all the introductions. I'm not saying who we are, what the name of the show is. Nothing.
Should I just sit in silence, or
Tottenham?
I wondered how long I could keep silence going on an audio podcast. Then, so just safe. Or as FPL Irons messaged me on during my Champ Man stream last night, I just start fiving us to get relegated, just in case. Because if we go down, I'd be a fucking millionaire. I'm like, you dickhead, donate the money to charity, you prat.
Oh, this. We need a 14-goal swing or something, I think it is.
Yeah,
now.
Safe, mate.
So, the likelihood of that happening is very low. But, obviously, after we beat Manchester United this evening, the likelihood is going to be zero. So...
if you win your last two games, you might qualify for Europe or something, right?
Based on the state of the table as it is, there is quite a jump up to 42 points, which is where I think Newcastle are, or Palace. I think Palace are at 42 points.
Yeah,
but yeah.
Somewhere near Arsenal's area, I think.
Well, they're not that far off you, right? 4 points is the gap between you and Arsenal, but they can't catch you now.
It's five, sir. No, they can't. Points. Oh, no, I think it's four. Listen, it don't matter. Four. They can't catch us anyway.
Is that a? I suppose you. I understand. In a season where there's not a lot to celebrate, you've got to look for the things that you can celebrate.
It's only worth celebrating because of the fact how much it fucking annoys them, and the reason it annoys them so much is because when we kept pushing and pushing them in the late noughties and the early teens, it didn't seem to matter. No matter what we did or how far ahead we were, they would always get us. And in fairness, in the majority of them seasons, they were a better football team than us, right? So the only thing to, let's say, enjoy is the fact that they're going, Jesus Christ, how shit must we be to be finishing below them? But in terms of, from our perspective, anything to celebrate, no, we've got a job to do on Sunday. And if we do finish sixth in the league, there's still nothing to celebrate. Ain't going to be doing laps or anything. It will just be, look, we're in Europa League. Well done, congratulations, move on. That'll be it. There's nothing to celebrate. For them, it's annoying because they still live in the mindset that they are better than us.
But that's quite a
the majority of them. Let's say I'm not saying all my.
No. Of course, I suppose. But better is quite a loose word. So are we talking then? Better in terms of a bigger football club? Are we talking better in terms of on the pitch? Are we talking about better in terms of run? It's interesting. It's interesting. You see, I still consider Arsenal a bigger football club than Tottenham right now because of the legacy and history. Even when you look at like Manchester United, let's disregard the last 3 months where United have been actually living up to the badge to a certain degree, but you still consider Manchester United because of the recent last 30 years worth of results, like incredible. Arsenal still are able to live off that period under Wenger where they were so good for a little bit longer. Nothing lasts forever. They got to a point where Liverpool couldn't live off past glories anymore, nor will Arsenal. But right now, I still feel like that they can. Yet they still, like, yesterday I was looking at it. I had Emi Martinez in goal for my FPL team, and I knew he wasn't going to keep a clean sheet because they don't have the ability to back up a great result against City by getting another result like that. They just don't have that ability to. So as good as they are, and I really honestly think that they have more potential in the next 5 years than Spurs do, which, call it controversial, but I think just that I prefer their, I think their manager's better. I think the youth talent that they have coming through is stronger. Then to do something dumb like lose to Aston Villa is just so...
Arsenal.
Typical.
So Arsenal.
Yeah.
Would you at all surprised that they lost to Villa?
No.
Not me.
Yeah, I was. I didn't think
they'd get beat, but it didn't surprise me.
That first 15, 20 minutes, they had, I mean, when it came up with the stat, I think it was after about 20 minutes that they'd had 70% and Villa had 30. I had to check myself. Did Villa even have as high as 30%? Because Arsenal were knocking it around and keeping the ball without penetrating in the final third. And so I did think that the longer it went on, that Arsenal were just knocking it around without doing anything. It was inevitable that Villa were going to nick a goal against them. So, yeah, I didn't expect them to lose. But, yeah, I would have never bet on Arsenal to win, put it that way.
We'll talk about this more tomorrow on the main
podcast. Yeah, I think we should.
But do you know which Arsenal players created the most chances since Mikel Arteta took over?
That's a very good question. I'm going to have a stab at Lacazette.
It's Mesut Ozil.
Ah.
It is.
Can't be.
It is.
He hasn't played for half the game.
Yeah, exactly. It is.
He's created the most big chances?
I think it's just most chances created. It might be big chances. I'm not sure.
Did you say since Arteta took over?
Yes, since Arteta took over.
Sorry. I interpreted your question. I don't know why.
It doesn't matter. He still hasn't played since March 7th, mate.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they can take all the praise from Saturday and Manchester City and Liverpool last week and deserving to win those games through great defensive displays. They now have the flip of it where they're actually unbelievably, and this is something that Arsenal never particularly missed, they have a problem at the moment with creativity. And clearly, that stat alone tells you everything you need to know. In terms of the Tottenham Arsenal and rivalry, just to go back to that very briefly, are they a bigger club than us? Yes, because four seasons doesn't make you a better football club or a bigger football club by finishing above your rival. Manchester City have finished above Manchester United for 7 years in a row now. They're not a bigger football club than Manchester United.
No.
Are they a better team at the moment? Yes, of course, goes without saying.
By far.
Are Arsenal a better team than us still? No, that's a very level playing field. I would describe us as equally as shit as each other, basically.
Yeah.
And that's why there's nothing to celebrate in Tottenham finishing above Arsenal. In previous years, there's been some stuff really to throw at them. This isn't one of them years. Should they go on and win the FA Cup, which they've got every chance of doing so, they've had a better football season than us.
It's tricky. So, you think you're going to win at the weekend? You've been on a good little run at the moment.
Yeah, I do think we'll win. I think a lot of that's influenced by the opposition and they have got a defensive crisis going on in terms of injuries. I mean, they're going to have to play Kiarte at centre-half again. And Kiarte will fall into David Luiz mode on Sunday. He'll either head everything away and be brilliant, or he will be a complete car crash. I suspect that he'll probably be more like a car crash, actually, because there's nothing to motivate them as such. They're obviously on a horrendous run. So, yes, I think we probably will win on Sunday. Whether we finish 6th or 7th is beyond control, because I do think Wolves can win at Chelsea.
Yeah, I mean, if Chelsea get anything out of the game today and their European spot is safe, Champions League spot is safe, then they'll potentially, I think Chelsea are more likely to rest players leading into the FA Cup final than potentially Arsenal, for example.
It's only going to be safe for Chelsea if they win tonight, to be absolutely sure that they'll be in the Champions League next year. Or I think if United lose, isn't it? Then they're safe, I think.
Yeah.
We'll know in 24 hours anyway, but I wouldn't expect Chelsea to just roll over even if they had nothing to play for. I think that'll go to the final day. They'll go into the game thinking that they have to do something against Wolves to be safe for 4th, I should imagine. So, there's some important games for the weekend, right? Leicester United, Chelsea, Wolves, the three games at the bottom of the table now. Some important games. It's nice to get to a final day and there's games at stake, because quite often we get here and it's like, season's finished. Do you know what I mean? So, at least your team obviously has a game that is important, mate. Although not for yourselves.
I don't think we'll roll over against Villa. I don't think we will.
Oh, I think you'll beat Villa.
Mm.
That's my instinct. I wouldn't be surprised. If you ask me right now, I think all three teams will get beat on Sunday.
Yeah, interesting. You know what? I'm in a difficult situation here because I have Watford fans that I'm friends with. I have Villa fans that I'm friends with. I only have a handful of Bournemouth fans that I know and I'm friends with. Because
there's only a handful of Bournemouth fans.
Exactly. But so my one of my best mates from university, we lived together for 4 years, is a Toffee. And his wife is from Bournemouth and is a Bournemouth fan. So this weekend, it's like, if Bournemouth had managed to get a result on Tuesday, was it Monday or Tuesday, whatever it was, he was like, the last day of the season in my house is going to be a little bit dicey, because I think if Everton, he wants Everton to win, but they could do his missus team a favour. But I don't know many Bournemouth fans, but I don't have a preference. I suppose my point here is that I don't have a preference on who goes down and who stays up. So like Villa fans tagging me and saying, look, do us a favour. I'm like, yeah, sure. But I'd rather whatever happens, happens. If you beat us and you're fair and square and you play well, credit to you. But I don't really want to beat you guys by 1-0 and do everyone else a favour or whatever else it may be. Just stay out of it is what I feel like at the moment.
I think as it stands, as I said, I think all three will probably get beat. And I think Villa will stay up on goal difference. That's probably how it's looking at the moment. Because I can't see Villa losing to you heavily. And Watford, therefore, then losing to Arsenal narrowly. That would be remarkable, wouldn't it? Imagine losing on the final day of the season and going from 18th to 17th.
You know what? We've had some attacking results, like 4 against Norwich, 3 against Watford. We have scored a few goals recently, so could put 2 or 3 away. And I mean, last day of the season, you may as well just go for it, right? You know that we talk about car crash games. There's always going to be one on the final day of the season. Do you think that could be it? A 3-2, 4-3?
I guess in theory, yeah, it could be. I wouldn't expect it to be. I just don't see David Moyes involved in too many of those types of games. I think he'll treat the game very seriously. I think Villa's objective will be to keep the game quite tight to start with, try and get some control on the game. And their biggest threat is still, was kind of seen from last night, it's going to be goals from set pieces and the like. The mad one, I think, might be Everton and Bournemouth. It's just my instinct.
Yeah, potentially.
Do you think you'll win Sunday?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you said that very confidently.
Yeah, yeah. If you look at some of the stats, Moyes' record against the teams around us is what has kept us up. I think we haven't lost to any of the other teams in and around us in the relegation battle. And in amongst that, since Moyes took over, we had some good performances against the likes of Liverpool and City and what have you. So, all in all, it's been tough, but I'm not down in the dumps now that we're safe. And I think if we play to our strengths and use Suchet to get into the box and cause trouble, and Antonio's strength and Bowen and stuff, I think we'll do all right. I think we should beat Villa. Put it this way, if we should beat Villa, shouldn't we, on paper?
No, not necessarily. I don't think there's a huge amount between the two teams. I think you've got more...
Look at their midfield. You've got Douglas Luiz.
You should support Arsenal, mate. You're in that deluded zone.
Douglas Luiz, McGinn, Grealish.
Luiz, genuinely, I think if he played in a better team, would actually look better.
Yeah,
I think he's someone who is capable of being a destroyer in there. It's basically his first Premier League season. We know he was at City before, but didn't play. It's basically his first season. I think he's flattered to deceive. I think he's okay on the ball. I think actually he's the sort of one who, if they went down, they'd be interested in him, actually. I mean, he's a decent player. He'd be a good replacement for Declan Rice, you know?
Well, we're going to have to replace him, so that's saying something.
Chelsea ain't buying him this summer, are they? Trying to get Havertz as well, or has Abramovich just lost his mind? And God, fuck it, we're going for it one more time.
Well, obviously City have managed to flaunt fair play, so Abramovich is thinking, sod it, I'm gonna too, because what, now that the precedent's been set that we can get away with whatever we like, may as well go for it. I think they'll get Rice for 50 million, be done with it, and I think that's fine. It's a decent price for them to get Rice at 50 million at his age and what he can offer to the team.
Do you think?
Yeah,
I think you might be undervaluing him now, and some people will laugh.
No, as in, it'll be a good value for Chelsea. If they can pay 50 and get him, I think it'd be good value. And I think if we were offered 50, I think we'd take it as well.
I don't think you would, mate.
Interesting.
Money you paid for Allaire, mate?
Yeah, but 50 million is a lot of money. 50 million is the money you have to listen to for any player. 50 million suddenly is a price tag. Like, interesting.
Whether he's worth it or not, it's a different consideration. Just think West Ham would be demanding more money than that unless he really, really wanted to put his foot down and force it through. He doesn't strike me like that type of character.
Not at all.
It's clear that that's probably his team and where he wants to end up playing. But I think he's also very thankful for what's been given to him by West Ham. So I don't think he's in a rush particularly to stitch the club up. Plus, he knows that West Ham, he's going to play every week. Where go to Chelsea at the moment and you're depending on stylistically how they play, playing with Jorginho, Kante, Kovacic, you've got a lot to compete with. And the other obviously thing about going to Chelsea is, and with the best respect to them, you might rock up there in the summer and in September, October, there'll be a different manager in charge and he just might not fancy you at all. So that there's always that risk for the English players that disappear a bit.
Ross Barkley Mark II, you know what I mean? Ross Barkley's still a player that had and has the potential but doesn't get the minutes enough for us to see what he can do.
It's interesting you mention Ross Barkley because I've heard him as a potential make weight in a deal.
I mean, I'd take it all day long. If he was involved in the deal, I'd be happy. I'd take Ross Barkley. I like him. I tell you who I won't take, and watch this space if it happens, because it'll be, you're talking about rants on a podcast. That'll be a rant on a podcast. I've heard rumours that we might go and buy Jesse Lingard. if that happens, that's a dumb move.
I've heard Phil Jones and Chris Smalling as well.
Yeah, I mean, if those are the kind of transfers that show the mindset and intent of the management and the structure of the club.
Do you not think that shows more the mindset of the manager, actually, in fairness?
I would like to know the involvement of Moyes in picking the transfers that we're making or not.
I would say that if David Moyes buys Phil Jones, Chris Smalling or Jesse Lingard, that is David Moyes' choice, mate.
Yeah, there would be bad. But I think what he'll probably do is get back the team from... get as many of the Manchester United squad that he took over from Fergie back into our team, win the
Fellaini.
League with them and say there you go, I told you so.
Fellaini to play with Souček.
We are
the two of them together.
I told you so, club. Let me get all of those players that I had at United, win the league with them, and then I can tell everybody I told you so. That's what his strategy is. Have we figured it out? Have we figured out right. Moyes' master plan?
Serious question then. Do you not think Jesse Lingard would improve your team? Just stop and think about it for a minute.
I don't think, there's a lot to think about in terms of what's the transfer fee you're going to pay and what have you. If Jesse Lingard was in the squad right now, I'd rather play Philippe Anderson ahead of Jesse Lingard. I wouldn't rather play Lanzini ahead of Lingard, but I'd rather play Fornals ahead of Lingard. He's not better than Anderson or Fornals, Jesse Lingard. He's had the odd game where he's a world beater, but he's not consistently better. He will sit on the bench. If Jesse Lingard, you know, what was your bet with Sham on Jack Wilshere? 80 points, was it, in the end?
Oh, I don't know. How many goals does Wilshere have to get on Sunday?
I'll give you 50 points, Jesse Lingard, in a West Ham shirt next season, should he sign. He won't get more than 50 because he won't play enough, James.
I'd be interested in that. 25 times two pointers. I think that's possible.
there are players in the squad that are better, so we'll see. I got tagged in a tweet from I'll have to check who, because I'll be rude if I don't mention him, but there was talk that Moyes went to QPR to look at buying Eze from them as our number 10, and I'd rather we went and did that, and I'd rather spend more on something like Eze than Jesse Lingard, because it's a mentality of we're investing for the future.
Yeah, you've got it, you've got the idea. Eze is a player that Tottenham have been looking at as well. I'd heard pre-lockdown that was potentially a done deal, actually, that Eze was coming from QPR to Tottenham. Whether that's changed now because of circumstance, I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if it has changed. It looks like Everton are outbidding Tottenham for Højbjerg from Southampton.
Okay.
And this is what's caused a little bit of anger in the Twitter community last night. So on Tottenham Twitter last night, it wasn't so much about... There were dickheads putting up silly pictures of fucking fuck Arsenal and all this shit, but there really wasn't nothing to be ranting about. Those on the more serious nature were doubling down, and Daniel Levy was trending actually within an hour of full time at the Arsenal game last night. And you see that and you think, oh my God, what sort of stupid piss take has someone put together? And it was actually based on this idea that Everton are going to win this race to sign Højbjerg. Now, Højbjerg, for me, is a stopgap signing. I don't think he's Champions League material, in my opinion. I do like him as a footballer. If he walked in the door for us, I wouldn't particularly complain about it. But I don't foresee that as the type of player that we particularly should be targeting. However, it does appear that it's the player that the manager wants. Now, I don't necessarily agree with the majority of his decisions, you know that. But if that's who he wants, 25 to 35 million really is not a huge amount of money in the modern market, then go and buy him. If that's who he's identified that's going to fix the central midfield problem, and I don't think he would be able to, but if that's who he's identified can fix that problem, go and get him. And that's what's caused the anger last night, is it looks like that Tottenham are going to be outbid by Everton. And then you get people posting all these players that Tottenham have let go because they wouldn't pay the extra money. I've spoken, when we first started doing the podcast, I kept speaking to you about Pochettino's regret that he couldn't get the deal for Sadio Mane done when Sadio Mane went to Liverpool. Mm-hmm. And there have been plenty other instances of players that have been let go. For example, another one is Bruno Fernandes, who Tottenham could have bought last year when they went for Lo Celso and Ndombele. They could have got Bruno Fernandes. If they tried for Bruno Fernandes last summer, Bruno Fernandes would be playing for Tottenham now. And it's just another one of those that will add to the frustration of, it's going to come down to money. The money's not being put up front for transfers, and people are now at a stage where they're having enough. So people are massively frustrated amongst the Spurs support with what's going on at the moment. Now, of course, we've started having some good results, so no one's going to point the finger at the manager at the moment. So Daniel Levy's getting it at the moment. And if we don't finish sixth at the weekend, or if Arsenal win the FA Cup, he's going to get it worse over this summer. And I think you're heading towards a big revolt amongst Spurs fans, where it's going to be split between the crap football, get Mourinho out, and get the owners out because they're not spending the money. And it's a bit of a minefield because you can't actually get rid of either, because of financial issues. So I don't actually foresee a great future for my football club in the very near future. I do in the long term, but not in the short term.
It's amazing how it's just 12 months on from a Champions League final that things can get to that level, isn't it? We lose sight, in my opinion, of how competitive the football landscape is now. Over time, I think there's been a levelling up of some of the mid-tier clubs. That anyone can beat anyone on any day. And too many people are used to the days where a lot of smaller clubs will just get steamrolled. That doesn't happen as much. It's hard to build a team. And access to global talent means that you can go and unearth gems from all around the world. And you get two or three together at the right time and teams can go on great runs. I mean, Wolves has been built off finding Portuguese talent, young Portuguese talent, and putting it together. So much of it is not all of it. I understand you've got Jimenez and all of that kind of stuff, but that was their thing, right? That's how they, with their scouting network, that's what they made work. Anyone can do that now. You need it all to fall into place. But football's competitive now. So as Spurs fans, you've got to understand, there's no God-given right. And I'm not saying that fans think like that, but we all have to put it into context. There's no God-given right to anything. I mean, we've got years and years of underachieving. And I think my club and my fans have, I don't know if delusions of grandeur, but that idea that we are more than we are quite often. It's funny, one of my WhatsApp group chats, there were a few fans in there, a couple of Spurs fans who go to games regularly, talking about the FA Cup semi-final. And one of them saying how annoying it was that Arsenal had won. And I just said, I can't remember. I said something along the lines, is it annoying for this reason, or is it annoying that Arsenal actually might win a trophy this season and you won't? And he came back with a comeback straight away. And I was like, yeah, to be fair, it's very difficult living in a glass house because I shouldn't be throwing stones, but I still like to throw for fun anyway. But we've been living in this glass house for years, right? It really is a long time since we have anything that we can really shout about. And if what one season finishing fifth or something is not going to do it. So it's very frustrating, but we don't have a God-given right to be anything else other than where we are, because football is a meritocracy.
Every football club thinks their club is bigger than what they are.
That's a very profound statement, James, that I'd have to think about, but I think you might be right.
I mean, look, football fans, there's highs and lows. Some people will feel, there's a lot of people right now who think I'm being overly negative on Tottenham and the performances on the pitch, mainly because of the manager. It's fair enough, that's what people think. But then I'm one who doesn't tend to get so high on the highs. I tend to keep myself quite low. I'm not, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. I've never really been like that. But the majority of fans, like when you say to me, oh, Arsenal is still a bigger club than Tottenham, I will say to you, yes. But I do inside, when you say that, feel a little bit uncomfortable with that, because I want to be able to turn around to you and go, no, we're now bigger than them. And I think inside, if someone was saying that in the pub, I'd have a banter and be like, no, mate, it's 4 years in a row now, mate. We're bigger and better than you now. We've got a bigger stadium than you, this, that, and the other. But I think the majority of fans, if I said to, let me just pick someone out here. Let's say Sheffield United, right? They've had a good season. Sheffield United, as a size of football club, really are upper level Championship, lower level Premier League in terms of status of football club. That's roughly where the size of that football club would be at. Now, if I have that conversation with a Sheffield United fan at the moment, it's going to end up with someone throwing a punch at me, mate. Basically. Because no Sheffield United fan is going to agree with that statement. They think they're bigger. If you speak to a Sheffield Wednesday fan, they'll then chip in and go, well, actually, Hillsborough's much bigger than Bramall Lane. In terms of historically, we've played better football for perhaps many of the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, etc. We're a bigger club. Sheffield United fans go, oh, we was here at the start. We was in FA Cup finals in 1901. And that's a fact, though, by the way. They was beaten by Tottenham. But it just goes on. Every club thinks they're bigger than what they really are, bar probably Manchester United.
Yeah, I was going
to
suggest.
To be very honest.
But even
with
then,
you.
If you ask United fans, they'll say that they should be in and competing in the Champions League. They feel like they should be.
Well, that's the truth for the size of that football club. There isn't a doubt about that one.
But on the pitch, they're not at that level. They're getting there, but they're not at the moment.
So fans can criticise what they see on the pitch, but what they inwardly think about their size of their football club, they'll always think it's a bit bigger than what it really is. And I think that goes for 99% of football fans. There's something uncomfortable about not saying you're the biggest club in the world, I think, a little bit. Even though it's obviously reality. Most people, I mean, take the Tottenham and Arsenal argument. What do you really pin it on? Do you pin it on, which I would pin it on, and go, well, they've been far more successful than us in my lifetime going to football. They've won far more trophies. So therefore, they're a bigger club. Do I think they've got more fans than us? Domestically, no. But globally, yes. And I think because of the 90s and the noughties, that Arsenal probably do have more domestically fans than Tottenham. But I don't like to believe that. We don't have a problem selling out the 62,000 or so, although with the football we might be getting served up in the next couple of years, that might soon fucking change. Whereas look at Arsenal, have struggled to fill the Emirates in the last couple of years. So then do you go, oh, well, actually, we've got bigger fans. No, it's not really the case. I think there's a bit of level in there. But most people listen now and go, no, James, this and Arsenal are far bigger football club than Tottenham. And I get that, but I don't feel comfortable with that. I shouldn't imagine an Everton fan ever feels comfortable saying Liverpool Football Club is a bigger football club than them. When Everton were around first, all right, it's going back 130-odd years. But that's the reality, they are. And for City fans, United are always going to be bigger. It doesn't actually matter what Man City do in the next 50 years. Manchester United will always be a bigger football club. I'm convinced of that.
You know what, James? I now wish this podcast was released to the public. Do you know why? Because it's got a perfect title. Mine's bigger than yours.
Mine's bigger than yours? We would call it Mine's Bigger Than Yours.
Oh, dear. I've got a bigger one than you.
we can open this out as a free podcast at some point. But listen, the patrons get the good podcast shit as well, right?
They do indeed. They do indeed. So with the lack of West Ham game, and we did cover the Tottenham game, a little bit less for us to cover on this Tottenham for you, but a little bit of insight into opinions on our clubs, and I hope it's been an enjoying listen nonetheless. Good luck to West Ham tonight. We're going to batter Manchester United 3-0. as always, is my prediction. Let's see.
I'm not even going to invite myself around to your garden this time, mate.
Yeah. Do you know? This is this game tonight highlights the difference between you and me from a football and an FPL point of view. I would take a West Ham defeat for a Martial hat trick.
Wow.
If you offered it to me today, because nothing riding on it for us, right? Whereas now I've got something riding on it. Whereas you would never do that, I know, because of your allegiance. So, based on the fact that we've got nothing to play for, had we had something to play for, like getting into the top six or a trophy on it, yeah, of course, I couldn't give a monkeys about my FPL team. But based on the fact that we're safe, I'll take a Martial hat trick for a West Ham defeat, 3-2. Thank you very much.
As it stands, we're basically three players against three players this game week, and one of my players happens to be Raheem Sterling. And I currently lead you by 5 points.
It's Martial versus Maguire, basically.
No, you've got Pulisic as well. So there's a strong possibility that you'll go back ahead of me tonight. I mean, what would be ideal is if Pulisic and Martial blank and Man United keep a clean sheet, you're in trouble for game week 38. I've completely turned it.
Yes, but then there's the other alternative. Mason Greenwood gets benched, doesn't play the whole game, and Phil Foden comes in first sub for me with an 8-pointer. So there's still a couple of permutations and combinations. I think it's one of those where it's so far from done, despite the fact there's only two games left. It's incredible.
I think we might have had a conversation about Phil Foden and playing him, mate. And I did say, yeah. Would anyone who asked me on my stream on Saturday, that's going to come back round for me. Greenwood or Foden. Fucking the amount of times I got asked that. I forgot what I said, but I'm pretty sure I said Greenwood. Foden's not going to get on for you, mate, unfortunately. He's not getting on, mate.
Yeah, it's unlikely. It's very unlikely. As it's
Greenwood is only not going to play if he's picked up an injury, and that applies to any of your players that you've got left. They're only not going to play if they're injured.
I think it was you yourself, Mr. James Linden, Planet FPL pod, that pointed out Greenwood versus Aaron Creswell could be a disaster. So Foden's 8 points might pale into insignificance later on today if Greenwood has his shooting boots on, which he hasn't in the last couple of games, to be fair. But if he's got that left foot on him again, forget about it.
Anyway, whatever happens today is going to make for two fascinating podcasts from our perspective. One is the main podcast tomorrow, where I think by which point I'll kind of know roughly what I'm doing and we can talk about it. Whether I'm chasing you, blocking you, just doing my own thing, whatever, we'll talk about it. And I think particularly for the patrons as well, the podcast on Friday, where we sort of really lock down in terms of, okay, what are we actually doing? And are we going to tell the truth about it is the other flip of it.
Well, look, I've only got two transfers, so for me it's not as much to hide, potentially. Well, I don't only have two, I could take a hit.
I'm going to try and work out what you're going to do and have a stab at it. And see if I can play a bit of poker with you. Because I think, and this is a bit naughty to say, I think if I'm right, I'll affect you mentally and you'll do something different.
I know one of my transfers already.
Yeah, go on, you want to share it?
Yeah. I'm going to move from Aaron Creswell to a Burnley defender.
Okay.
It's going to give me the coverage.
Is that it?
That's what I'm going to tell you.
I might have a triple up there, mate.
Yeah, I know you do. So even covering a third of it is worth it.
Is it worthwhile?
Yeah, potentially.
If I'm going to go for the Burnley triple, mate, you should avoid it completely. There's no point. I'm being serious. I'm giving you that as honest advice. You shouldn't go near it.
Before we go down this rabbit hole, so much depends on what happens tonight. Like, me being 5 points behind or me being 15 points ahead is going to completely change your mindset.
Yeah,
so let that happen first.
We could comfortably wake up in the morning and I'm 25 points behind you. And it's a very different conversation.
Do you know what? If you'd have said to me, I would like to go into the... Well, I don't think I would like to go into the last game week level and points, but there's a certain niceness about thinking, do you know what? At the start of the season, as we went into battle, to go into the last game week, 38 game weeks later, to be on exactly the same points, but then you've got your free hit card, so it's not quite...
I think the perfect scenario for, let's say, the content is for you to do just enough to be ahead. Not massively, but if you can gain sort of 10 points on me today.
10 points is about right.
Yeah, go into the game, we can be like 5 ahead of me or so. That's, with me with the free hit in hand, is like a perfect balance.
I think realistically that free hit is a 10 to 15 point chip for you. So I think I need at least my I need I think I need 15 points.
Let's be honest though, Suj, I'm likely to free hit and remove some players from my squad that are very good and are still capable of going off. So it's not like the normal advantage of the chip. I could make decisions that are very, very wrong. That's a possibility.
Yes, you can get players that I could never get to now, though, like your Harry Kanes and Aubameyangs and what have you. It'd be very difficult for me. And one of those could be explosive. Like the way I'd structured my wildcard squad and we'd spread it thin, and you'd adopted a similar strategy, had made it difficult for me to get to Sterling, for example. And look what happened. He's popped off now all of a sudden in two games. So it's fascinating. This is really is, you called it poker. It's poker, chess, and checkers all rolled into one.
If there's a disappointment from last night, of which there was none for me, by the way, it is that I don't think I'll be going for Aubameyang now. And I probably, because of exactly what you've just said, had probably part penciled him in as maybe even captain. And I don't see me wanting to go there now. I'm not going for Kane. It means that I'm almost definitely going to end up with a very, very powerful midfield. And I think if you're asking me right now, my most likely captain this game week will be the other one that you can't get to. And that's Raheem Sterling.
And on that bombshell, just like the other podcast, as always, patrons, thank you so much for all your support. Stay safe. Tune in the rest of the week. Ciao for now.
Thanks, patrons. Cue music, please, Manchild. Messi, I'm gonna miss you.